Dr. Ertok, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And thanks a lot for taking the time.
Well, I'm pleased to be with you.
It's a pleasure to be here. So, Dr. Barry Sears wrote the foreword for your book, The Hormone Solution. Mm-hmm. And in it, he says that hormones not only control our lives, but they also have the power to alter the expression of our genes. How so? What does he mean by that?
Well, he means that hormones work on the most important part of our body. It's the activity, the metabolic activity, that's the working of enzymes. Mm-hmm. And so when you stimulate gene expression, which the hormones do, you stimulate the production of enzymes, and you have a lot of reactions that happen more and adequately with beneficial effects. Mm-hmm. So basically, it's the sort of leaders are that will stimulate the cells to work adequately.
Mm. So please correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the main ideas in that book is that through proper nutrition, good lifestyle, and potentially the use of exogenous hormones, we can improve our lives and our health substantially, right? But why is it that hormones have such a bad press? Because they kind of do, right?
Well, first of all, this is really traditional medicine. It's just an extension of what happened 100 years ago with a lot of evidence and very strong, much more than what we could call now today emergency medicine. Mm. The reason that it's not so much well accepted is that many physicians have been working in the emergency field, and they don't understand that we would treat people who look healthy and make them healthier. Mm. And there are two reasons that then raise fear. Is they think it's not necessary, so it's maybe be potentially dangerous, and you could have a scare of hormones because it could give premature aging, cardiovascular diseases, and cancer, which it does not give normally if it's adequately treated. On the contrary, it would even protect against. But people just don't know that, and many physicians don't know that. They have a scare. They think it may happen with hormones, but in much less likely than with the latest anti-cholesterol medication, that some problems come, but it's at overdosages or imbalances. But when you give the adequate dose, you do just the opposite. Right. You will not only reduce premature aging, but possibly even reverse physical and mental aging. You will also probably decrease drastically the risk of cardiovascular. We see that in our patients really have a sort of top position. Mm. Position. You have also probably a much decreased cancer risk. In our patients, for example, we have 30% less cancer in the study that I published, while we have very sick people coming in, this which should have 30% more cancer, we have 30% less. And then the second reason, and this is absolutely amazing, is that it is thought that there's not enough scientific support for these studies, and people believe scientific is very important, but we have 10 to 100 times more double-blind placebo-controlled studies than almost any medication in the pharmacy that is not a hormone or not a vitamin or not a nutritional. Because we have studies since more than 70 years for most of the hormones, we have studies done by a lot of institutions all over the world. It's not only preserved by one firm. And for example, one of the most controversial hormone treatments, while it should not be controversial, is growth hormone in adults. And growth hormone in adults has more than 460 double-blind placebo-controlled studies. How much did sildenafil, the erection pill, the first one that came out on the market, have when it came on the market on PubMed, the most important data bank? One double-blind study with 12 persons. And in 2012, with that molecule, 1,824 deaths were reported, attributed to that molecule. If we had one single death with a hormone, it will be a whole controversy, which we don't have. Mm-hmm. So the safety is enormously bigger. The scientific support is much, much bigger. You're really in a safe therapy. I generally say this is 10 times safer than any new invented molecule, and that we really need these molecules.
As you said, most people go to the endocrinologist or to the hormone specialist when they are already sick, right? Few people go to see you or any other doctor to say, well, I'm doing fine, but I want to do better. That's rare, right? What has to happen in the health industry or in the health sector for that to change, to flip, to be the opposite?
Well, we just have to understand that there are two complementary medicines. There is the emergency medicine, which is fantastic. If I want my life to be saved, often it is better that I would take that new drug or I would go in the hospital and then I have a fine treatment. Mm. But for long-term treatment that you take several weeks, several months, you need the field medicine that we do, the healthy aging medicine, and that will be, when it's accepted, it has seen that this is very scientific, it has good results with very great safety, very few risk, if it's well balanced, then I think they medicine will completely change, and it's changing now.
So in your book, you the human body produces more than 100 hormones. In your book, you focus on the 15 most important. Of those 15, there are two of which we suffer a very sharp decline very early in life. It's growth hormone and melatonin, right?
Also DHEA is probably the sharpest decline of all.
Okay, yeah. But I wanted to focus, because you mentioned it before, growth hormone. Why is it so important to maintain good levels of growth hormone throughout life?
Well, there's been a study that showed that people who do not produce growth hormone in their life, they're smaller, they're dwarfs, of course, but they die, men die about 19 years earlier, and the women in the same family that have the bad gene die 34 years shorter. So if you want to live long, you need to have enough growth hormone. But that's nothing compared to the quality of life it gives. It really restores you when you have 4-6 hours of sleep and you had growth hormone, even with a lot of stress before, and the growth hormone is sufficient, you are restored. You recover the next day. You feel fresh.
So you can compensate to some extent sleeping less hours?
Yes, because you sleep much more deeply with growth hormone. It emphasizes deep sleep and the REM phase, the rapid eye movement phase, which is the dream phase. And then people recover much better. They sleep deeper, they need less sleep, and they feel better. It's also a hormone that calms down anxiety. People with age, they get more and more anxious, worried, and you know the generation gap is the problem of parents, not of the children, because they are over anxious because of low growth hormone. It's one of the main things. So if I stop my growth hormone treatment that I take since 23 years, actually I get, after 2 days, I get exhausted, not tired, exhausted. I don't recover, even I sleep 12 hours, and I need 2 hours of sleep more. And I have this anxiety without a reason. And it's not me. It's like a parasite emotions. So growth hormone gives this inner peace. It gives a strength. You can also do multitasking. Talk to you. I can answer another person who comes in. I can take a phone call, work on a computer, and I won't lose my concentration. I'll be calm, and I'll give the right answer.
Wow.
So it's also a hormone that gives you more solutions. It's really something everybody should get, and very easy to recognize. Eh? When you don't have enough growth hormone, you start having a bowed back. Mm-hmm. It gets very tensed here with neck pain, and your muscles start to become loose and less tonic. So you age, actually. It's one of the two major hormones, actually, that makes you do not age if you have enough, but if you don't have enough, you really age quickly.
Many people in the biohacking community are taking melatonin not only as a sleeping supplement, but also because they claim that it has some sort of effect on the brain, some sort of autophagy or cleansing power or neurogenesis, something like that. I don't know. I wanted to ask you if that makes sense to you or is total nonsense from California.
Well, melatonin is a molecule that is necessary for many other things than just sleep induction. Melatonin protects the brain from oxidative damage. What is oxidative damage? It's free radicals. It's a little fires in your brain or in your body that it calms down. It's the strongest and most potent antioxidant. It goes in everywhere, in the fat tissue and the protein tissue. And melatonin also fluidifies blood at night, so you don't get blood clots and things like that. And it's also completely relaxes your body. This is how it induces sleep, not by making you confused. It really relaxes your body so that you sleep like a baby. It's really the baby sleep that it gives, where you completely are relaxed. And it has many other things. It seems to protect against cancer by stimulating the immune system. So I think those people who take melatonin are right. You should have a small dose every day for many other reasons. But in America, there's a fashion to give a lot, huge dose of vitamins, huge dose of melatonin. And if you do that with melatonin, you suppress your adrenal glands. You can become burned out by low cortisol. So I always think you need the right dose. That is often a small dose, but adequate, like the body makes. That's in that range we should be. We should not give 10 times more. So we take an oral 1 or 3 milligrams. It's generally much too much. You need to have a sublingual 0.1 milligram, 0.05 milligrams, and much more when you have a jet lag, but otherwise not.
Okay. Many of the concerns, you partly already answered to this a little bit, but I would like you to expand on that. So one of the main concerns that people have about taking hormones is that they think that they might develop some sort of tolerance or some sort of side effects, negative side effects. I am playing the devil's advocate here a little bit, but isn't that a reasonable concern to have to some extent for some people?
Certainly not with melatonin, and mostly not with all the other hormones. The melatonin, actually, when you give a hormone, the own gland produces maybe 30% less. But this is just a temporary. It's just because it was overproducing and that was not enough. There was still a deficiency. So it comes down and the gland will tear and wear with time less because it has help. If you stop such a treatment, this has been shown for thyroid treatment and testosterone treatment, even 30 years later, you have exactly the same values after 2 or 3 weeks, it takes a little time, that you had initially. They were probably low, but they won't be lower and worse, which is surprising because there's an age-related decline that does not seem to occur in people who take the hormones. So I think it's just a help, and it's certainly not damaged, and it won't damage the gland, so it secretes less because you take it.
You often stress the fact that things like pollution, soil depletion, the widespread use of pesticides have a negative effect on the capacity of the human body to produce hormones, right? But still, there are so many people that don't see the link. Even doctors sometimes question, some doctors question that link between those two apparently independent facts, right? Could you please go over that mechanism? Why is that?
Well, let's first talk what happens when you have a pollutant. And basically, when you have pollutants in your body, they go everywhere in the body. But they will go more in the organs that have a quick, rapid blood flow. And that's the endocrine glands. They have much more blood flow in the endocrine glands than the liver or the intestines. And so they will accumulate where they are brought more frequently and more often and more quickly. Okay. And the endocrine glands are very fragile, so they will be hurt by that. And many things do damage to the pesticides. They are called endocrine disruptors, and there's less and less physicians that oppose the idea. There's more and more physicians say it's real, but we don't know what to do. Well, what to do is actually you take hormones, so you depollute easier, drink a lot of water, you go in the sauna and things like that, but you avoid the pollutants. In first instance, don't drink in a plastic bottle, for example, water that's full of plastic phthalates and things like that. They have done experiments in we have three health ministers, a Walloon, a Flemish, the federal. Right. They all had phthalates in their blood. You know, when you eat buy meat packed up in plastics, that's often a little fat and it takes the phthalates from the plastic. You eat plastic too.
Right. What else can we do to diminish the impact of estrogenics in general? You said sauna. Sauna is a very good tool, right?
Yeah, but that's to depollute. The first thing is to avoid
the first place, right?
So eat what you call the paleolithic type diet. Eat the diet of our ancestors of organic vegetables and fruits. With meat also as organic as possible, and you will have much less pollution, but you will have, because there's industry maybe 10 kilometers that send heavy metals in the and that go on the organic fields, vegetable green, but you will have much less. So that, I think that's the first. The second is to take hormones, especially thyroid hormones, make that you depollute easier. If you have a deficiency, please correct it. You'll depollute easier, and you will often lose the symptoms of pollution. Well, you didn't do anything else than the thyroid. And then, of course, there are specific treatments, but they are not as helpful as providing hormones so that your body its own will detoxify the hormones.
Interesting. You already touched a little bit also about nutrition, but I would like you to also to expand a little bit on which are the basic dietary like guidelines for a good health.
Well, this is extremely important. I always say the first thing is not to take hormone supplements. The first thing is to correct your diet. Okay. So the paleolithic type diet is the one that our ancestors had. And there are two things. One is completely unknown by the public. The other one is known by a lot of informed public, is that we need to eat the food that our body has adapted after millions of years. And that's basically, it can proteins that meat, fish, and poultry, but not cooked in oil or things. You have to boil them or you eat them raw, but or you put them in the oven at 85 degrees Celsius or 185 degrees Fahrenheit, but you do not cook them in oil, not even in coconut oil, because there's always some toxic fats originated that make you sick, tired, and cancer later. So you also eat vegetables and fruits. Fruits should be separate from the rest. And now the other item is that they didn't eat proteins in the evening in the prehistoric times. Never in the ashes of prehistoric fires that they found did they find bones of animals. So they didn't eat proteins. What for? Because they went hunting in the morning, they catch the prey in the morning and ate the prey in the morning.
Oh, interesting.
And they didn't eat it after, didn't have a fridge, so it was full of flies, they were not going to eat it after. And sometimes they didn't manage to catch a prey, they went hunting in the afternoon, they continued hunting in the afternoon, they ate in the afternoon, they never ate in the evening. Otherwise, we would have bones in ashes of fires. And sometimes they didn't hunt anything, so they had a rest of proteins. And the intestines is then flat, recovers. I am 61 years, I have a flat belly, but because I don't eat proteins in the evening. If you eat proteins in the evening, it puts your body in hypothyroidism. Normally, proteins should stay here 3 to 6 hours in the stomach and then go further. And at the end of the day, they are digested if you eat them in the morning. But if you eat them in the evening, it stays the whole night and the following morning. So maybe 12, 15 hours. And then you have a bloated belly lifelong and problems of obesity lifelong because of hypothyroidism during all that time. It slows down. A little bit technical for public, but it slows down the conversion of the prothyroid hormone T4 into the active thyroid hormone T3. So you, even with a good treatment, they have swollen eyes in the morning, they're puffy, they are have increased in fat and have increased in myxedema, waste products, because of this nighttime hypothyroidism. So these are the two things to do. And then, of course, to correct nutritional deficiencies like iron, zinc, vitamin A are the most important ones to stimulate hormone action also. Mm. But there are many others. There's also magnesium and things like that. So we correct that, and then you should take also hormones. Don't wait till you're 60 years old to take hormones. Right. You have to start on average at age 30, and then at 35 more hormones, and at 40 you should almost have the whole panel of hormones, and there are more than 15 hormone deficiencies because okay. It fared worse, but
right.
But we have a fantastic chance that we can correct them.
You touched also a little bit on fasting. No, well, you didn't explicitly say fasting, but so the human body developed in a world of fasting, feasting, right? Eating, building tissues, breaking down like misfolded proteins, malfunctioning tissues, that kind of thing. So fasting seems to be all the rage lately because of these benefits of cleansing the system and
well, autophagy. It gives a rest to the intestines and it needs it to recover to be able to digest better. People have hypoglycemia, they should eat less meals, not more meals, because otherwise you continue on overloading the burned out belly. When it's round, it's burned out. So you have to have a flat belly in between
meals. But how would you recommend someone to explore fasting, someone that hasn't ever done it, for example?
Well, simply skip your evening meal, that's all. And you start with that, that's already a miracle. And then you will see the change, your belly is going to get flatter. And you're going to have less intestinal gases and all other problems. The second thing is not eat too much proteins at lunch. You eat most of them in the morning. And you will see your digestion is going tremendously to improve, okay. Also if you follow the paleolithic type diet.
Okay. What is your take on coffee? Because, well, I know you don't like it or you don't recommend to take it, but there seems to be a lot of studies lately. I don't know who financed those studies, but that suggest that it's very dense in antioxidant, that kind of thing, and the net effect could be positive. That's what they claim. But I was very interested to know what you think.
The problem is that it's a disaster for the hormones. Okay? It increases the cortisol at the wrong time. It increases the insulin, the fat-inducing hormone. Right. So you have more cellulite and you have more fat on the belly. And then it decreases the growth hormone, which decreases the abdominal fat, and it decreases thyroid hormone. At least experience in animals have shown that. And you cannot give an adequate thyroid treatment to somebody who takes coffee. Especially the caffeine is deleterious. You have about 2 to 3 times bigger prostate volume in people with high coffee drinking. The more coffee, the more bigger the prostate is. Okay. And I have to actually treat people with enlarged prostate or cyst in the breast, or more often in cancer in the breast also. So there's too many side effects if you take it on a regular pattern. But if you take it once a week or twice a week, 1 or 2 cup, I don't think it's dramatic.
Okay.
But not every day. You should even not even a good food every day, because you get food allergies to it also. So I think it's reduce the quantity if you really like it. And why not take decaf? Because the decaf now is decaffeinated on a non-toxic way by carbon dioxide and water. And so that's better. But water is still better, because all these drinks, like coffee and decaffeinated, acidify your body, and you should alkalize. It's okay. Not become too acid. You can recognize when you are too acid. You have heavy legs when you go up the stairs. You everything seems more tiresome and things like that.
Okay, so coffee's a no-go.
No. Water is the best seller water. Since millions of years, so okay. Why not water?
So my understanding is that you run marathons, but you don't recommend other people to run them.
No.
It's sort of like do as I say, exactly. But not as I do kind of advice, right?
Well, not entirely. It's just to wear the consciousness that right. A marathon after age 35, if you don't correct your hormones, is dangerous to your health. Because you exhaust your body, you damage your body. And you see all these people that run marathons at high age, they are much more wrinkled than other people in the face, but the legs look still good, but the rest of the body is... So I think it's excessive. When I do a marathon, I have my hormones corrected, and I adapt further my hormones 2 or 3 days before the marathon, during the marathon, and after the hormones, so I don't get damaged. I've done a marathon about 48 hours ago, and I'm almost completely recovered. Imagine that with a normal person, even a very top person. No, because I take hormones, and now I don't even have to adapt tomorrow the hormones, because it will be corrected. Marathons, they should have some training. And you during the marathon, I take hydrogenated water. I put magnesium in the water that makes it hydrogenated, that is very antioxidant. So I do many, many different things. I take some more magnesium, some more potassium. So I adapt, and that is not done in most of the marathons. Mm. It's we're still in prehistoric times of marathon preparation and nutrition.
So let's take this person, he's 35, 40, is in good shape, but doesn't like sports at all, doesn't like physical activity, but is willing to make an effort to invest 45 minutes 3 times a week to do something for his health and his longevity, or her longevity. What type of physical activity would you recommend?
If it's 45 minutes 3 times a week, I would advise just walking.
Walking?
Actually, that is even healthier, I think, than jogging for long term. And studies have shown that if you run about 3 kilometers, 0.2 or 2 miles a day, if you walk, you have about 30% less mortality, less risk of dying. So that must be very positive. If you don't walk, you rest. So you have to walk. I think I would rather do it 4 or 5 times a week, 30 minutes, than just 3 times to 45. But it's very good direction. Now, somebody who doesn't want to do physical activity is hormone deficient. Because when you are hormonally in, you need to have something physical. You're like a hunter who needs to hunt, or an athlete who needs to move. So somebody, it's very suspicious of chronic hormone deficiency. Somebody doesn't like to do any sports or physical activity.
So it means something, right?
Yes, it's very, very suspicious of in need of hormone correction.
Let's talk about doctors. What makes the difference between a very good doctor and an excellent doctor?
An excellent doctor, very easy to know. You ask him the question, do you take these treatments? Do you take hormone treatments, especially for hormone doctors?
Yes.
If he doesn't, and he does everything for his patient the best, but he forgets to treat himself, it's a good doctor, but not an excellent doctor. So a real doctor has to have experience from within. If all the cardiologists, all the psychiatrists would take their own drugs they prescribe, they would probably change to other therapies that are safer. So I think an excellent doctor is the one who does treat himself. If you have a doctor who's obese and smokes before you, you have understood that doctor doesn't know much about how to do a good health.
Right.
So simply you look at him and you ask him the question if he takes his treatments.
How does a consultation with you or with any other doctor that follows your line of work look like? Like, I go to your consultation, like, well, I'm okay, but I would like to improve this and that, or I have this problem. How does it work? You look at me, you start with blood work.
Well, first, it's a different type of consultation in the sense that we do not consider a hierarchy. We are a team that's going to work.
Okay.
We're the counselor, but the patient is his or her health manager. So we need to have these two bosses together, and when we listen to the patient, but the patient has filled in a very long questionnaire that already makes them aware of the patient of his hormone or nutritional deficiencies or his food inadequacy, because there's sort of title, and then he fills in the question. And with this, we do a good physical examination. Many people say, I've never been screened so thoroughly, because we need this information, the signs and symptoms of hormone deficiency and sometimes excess, to know exactly how to balance the patient. And then we do a blood test and a 24-hour urine test. 24-hour urine test permits to have an idea of the production over 24 hours of the hormone, and also it has metabolites. So a hormone, when it has an action, it is converted to metabolites. So metabolites show that there's a lot of action of the hormone or not much action. So we can follow that over 24 hours, gives an excellent idea, and then we make the patient come back and we give treatments in according to what we find. But we don't base ourselves only on clinical, on physical exam or on the questions of the patients or on the lab tests. We take everything together and make an evaluation, and we have to see then the patient back to further fine-tune the treatment.
Mm-hmm. What have you learned over the past 2 years that excites you the most?
Well, there's unbelievable things that are really happening. I would say two things that have, for me, been very impressive is peptide therapies. Peptides are little proteins, if you know, but when we talk about peptides now, it's mostly substances secreted by organs, and mostly the muscles, but sometimes the liver and other organs. And these peptides will have an action on these organs that is extremely strong. More powerful than growth hormone IGF-1 are probably peptides like mechanogrowth factor and follistatin to improve the muscle tonus. It seems to rejuvenate your whole body, the skin, and even the genital areas, and very quickly if the dose is adequately given. So this is really very enthusiastic. There's no legislation really on it, but it's in preface to see the results. The problem is the difficulty of access. But so these are safe therapies with body-owned molecules. Sometimes they have received a molecule so that they have a longer action in the body. But it's very impressive, and it will revolutionize further medicine like hormone therapies did. But they're not hormones because they're not secreted by endocrine glands. Then second, but that's just, is that I have done, I had damage to my eyes that was severe. I had not really wanting, but I let myself die, back pain, and I received cortisol injections. They completely destroyed my eyes. So I was blind in half of one eye, and I had, so I had double cataracts. So I put cataract lenses in, and what happened is they were focused for far, so I had to put glasses to read. I don't put any glasses to read now, or sometimes it happens 2 times a month when it's very dark and I need to see something, because I did two things. First, my eyesight improved extraordinarily, I would say, by 2 sessions of stem cell therapy. The stem cells are cells that can transform themselves in other cells and replace cells that are gone. Mm-hmm. And so basically I had an injection here and around the eyes, and with not the first 2 months, but after 2 months my eyesight became really very good.
Wow.
And then to read, so I saw more, and to read close by, I had telomerase activators. I took not even the best, I took astragalus and extract, a plant extract, a root extract, and I took epitalon, which is a nutrient made by the pineal gland that we have, and that has many anti-cancer and many beneficial effects, but it also reversed my eyesight. I had tried those products before. They also improved my seeing, but here I took two of those of uncontrolled brands, controlled for quality, but not controlled for the efficacy, and it tremendously works extremely well for my eyesight.
Incredible.
So I'm very happy to see more colors and things like that. So my life is full of colors.
Improved. Do we have 5 more minutes? Yeah? I would like to talk about oxytocin. You wrote a book specifically on oxytocin. And I would like to talk a little bit about me. I am not shy. I am not an introvert. But I don't have a natural tendency to be a very social person, right? So oxytocin is the hormone of socialization, joy, pleasure. How can someone like me improve his or her levels of oxytocin? I mean,
Well, first, you could, of course, take the oxytocin sublingual and you will feel the difference. And you have to do it because you will see that it will always work better by taking oxytocin than by an alternative way. And you will benefit. I see signs that make that you will really be happy to take it.
Right.
Because what does oxytocin make? It makes that you really feel people as much more wonderful people. You like to be with them much more because they irradiate some warm-heartedness, and that's actually your own warm-heartedness that bounces it. So basically, please do it, because myself, I'm lacking oxytocin, I take some. I would never like to have died without knowing what the effect of oxytocin is. It brought romanticism in my life. When I leave my wife from 5 meters, I suffer now, but it's a delicious suffering from all the good memories. So basically, it is important to have oxytocin. It's also protective for cancer, prostate cancer and things like that, and breast cancer. So there are many. It also protects your heart against heart attacks and things like that. At least there are studies that cause vasodilation. But if you really want to do it another way, you can meet people. The more you meet people, the more you will have oxytocin. People who live with a partner and not alone have more oxytocin. And you can touch people, you'll increase your oxytocin. If people do a massage to you, you will have more oxytocin. You won't have as much as people who's already extremely rich in oxytocin, so people are very expressive and things like that, but you will produce more. So people will produce they will produce even more when they have all these things. Singing can also make you produce more oxytocin. Images of happy people will give you more oxytocin. There's many studies on. In fact, it's one of the compounds that is the most psychologically studied with double-blind placebo-controlled studies. Hundreds. It's not just two or three for anti-cholesterol medication. So basically, there are many other things. I've written a book called Oxytocin and the Passion You Have Behind It, and it has all the different things you could do to improve oxytocin. And you will see there are many things that will improve. I even met in a guy who did exactly what you should do to increase your oxytocin, because he had not much. And he was a trainer, coach, psychological coach for other people. And he showed that you play like a child, make people laugh. And it's true that you will increase your own oxytocin and those of others then. But do not forget that it will be much better, higher level, when you take additionally to that oxytocin.
Okay. The very last question, Dr. Ertok. I want to be respectful of your time.
No, but you can, because I have a little time.
Okay, then I have 2 questions. One is for the fitness people. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but also my understanding is that pregnenolone is the precursor of both cortisol and testosterone. Is that roughly?
It's a precursor, yes, but it after age 35, there's very poor conversion when you take it orally.
Okay.
It should stay in your body much longer for it to have a good conversion.
Okay, but my question is, fitness people take cortisol blockers. Well, some people take cortisol blockers because, well, cortisol is catabolic, right? And they don't want that. They want to favor the pathway for testosterone. Are they playing with fire by doing that?
One of the problems is that in most people with age, there's less bioavailable cortisol available for the target cells. So by doing that, it's somewhere an absurdity, because you're going to aggravate a situation that will cause, because cortisol is the main anti-inflammatory hormone, inflammation in your body. So it's not the right way. You actually, if you're cortisol deficient, you should take cortisol, but you should add always, there's no exception to that, anabolic hormones. Anabolic hormones are not anabolic. So it's natural hormones that are in our body that build up the body, build up tissues. And they block excessive breakdown from cortisol so that you make the treatment safer and you make even the treatment more efficient. Because if you add DHEA to cortisol, you have much more the reduction of any unwanted inflammation. So basically, and it's not only DHEA, but growth hormone and many other hormones that can be additionally given that will protect against any side effects. It's better to do that way than decrease your hormones. Mm-hmm. You need the hormones.
Okay. I don't know if this statistic is correct, but I read that according to the World Health Organization, testosterone levels in males have been dropping like 1% since the 50s. So that means we're half the man we used to be, I guess. How can we improve also the levels of testosterone?
People now,
that don't want to take it exogenously, for example.
This investigation for testosterone actually is something that is already since thousands of years on. When you look at the buildup of the face of the Cro-Magnon and the Neanderthaler and the Homo sapiens before, the males had much bigger bones and jaw bones and much more testosterone expression. So the testosterone is reducing not only now, it's increasingly decreasing now with pollution, but it was always decreasing because if you want to live in society, you may not have too much testosterone, or you want to be sometimes too violent and things like that. I have corrected my testosterone levels relatively good, but I have other hormones that calm down the aggressiveness of testosterone. I hope so.
Right.
But so it has a social meaning to lower the testosterone. It's not really a bad thing, but you must have a minimum amount or a medium amount of testosterone, where you feel extremely determined. And to increase that, you can already do it by the food, and you might increase it by about 30% your levels, which is significantly a difference. The first is to avoid things like sugar, and because sugar decreases the production of testosterone. And if they do a test sometimes to see if you have diabetes, you drink a sugar drink and you decrease 8 hormones, and one of those is testosterone, by eating sugar. It's the same as you go in one of those big hamburger restaurants and you take a big milkshake, you will have an oral glucose tolerance test and you will decrease 8 hormones during about 24 hours. Wow. By doing that. So avoid doing that. And then the second is to eat protein-rich food like meat, fish, fish less, but meat and poultry more, but fish a bit, and then fat-rich food like ghee or clarified butter from the Hindu. They take out the proteins, they give allergies, and that's the best butter. And egg yolk and all these types of food, like also liver, organ meat, they are rich in healthy fat, actually, if you don't cook them at high temperature. Mm-hmm. And that increases your testosterone levels. And you will have better testosterone levels, surely. But do not drink your beer or alcohol, because that's a decrease about 30 to 40% the next day of testosterone. So the men who drink beer, they think they are men, but 10 years later, their fat belly with beautiful breast, you should have a bra.
Right.
And that's not being a man.
So alcohol is also a no-go, right?
Alcohol on a daily basis, certainly not good. It blocks 2 hormones more than others. Growth hormone, if I give a growth hormone treat, it has almost zero effect if a person drinks even half a glass of alcohol a day. So they may have to limit alcohol to 2 days per week, the weekends, for example, to 1-2 glasses. And the testosterone also is inactivated, and you lower the The growth hormone levels that are so important, it's one of the main hormones to keep you young. It decreases if you drink 1 or 2 glasses per day, about 70% your production of growth hormone. And that's just if you do it once. If you do it several times every day, it's 75% reduction. So if you want to premature age, continue on drinking your alcohol. You probably won't have so much cardiovascular disease, but there are 6 other causes of death that increase, cancer, by accident, by violence, and things like that. And you will also premature age.
Dr. Hector.
You have to eat paleolithic diet and you'll be much happier with that, with oxytocin.
Oxytocin. I will take oxytocin. Thank you very much. This has been
welcome.
This has been a masterclass. And
thank you.
I hope we'll do a round two maybe in the future.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.